The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's in slow motion so we can be beautiful too. It's Sifpa!
I couldn't even hold it.
Welcome to SifPop Weekly. We're streaming live most Fridays or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Cheerio.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he just has to get him one of those coats. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. How you doing, Mr. Ormsby?
I'm doing pretty well. Got a big trip going for tomorrow. Gonna be fun going to Kansas City.
That's fun. KC is a good place to go hang out.
Yeah,
I just love the fact that there were at least a dozen or so people who were like, wait, did my podcast settings go to 0.5 or so? Like, what is happening here? No, it's all in honor of Mr. Snyder and his love for the high frame rate, slow motion, action shots. So yeah, so that's what we're doing. We're glad you joined us to hang out with us today. Both those who are watching live, thank you for hanging out with us live, and those who listen in the podcast feed, we appreciate that as well. We've got fun today to have. We've got Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon Part 2, which, by the way, we never officially reviewed Rebel Moon Part 1 on this show. We didn't have an episode where we actually did a full review of that. So this will be kind of a sum up of the two, as much as a conversation about the second part. And then we're going to take a look at The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. This, of course, is Guy Ritchie's latest, based on a true story, something that happened. And get this, a movie about, you're not ready for this, World War II. We've never seen one of these before. But we will see one today.
Never one like this.
I totally missed that we should have done best ever Cary Elwes movies, since he was in both of these. But I went with best ever Anthony Hopkins for this week, since he is ostensibly in Rebel Moon. And then, of course, we'll end with the Sift Quest as well. Before we get to any of it, though, just a reminder, Summer Some Game is coming. In fact, it's coming next week is when we are doing our picks here. Now, you have to the first week of May, or I should say the first day of May, to get your picks in for the Summer Some Game. You just go to the website. It says Summer Some Game there at the top. Click on it. Make your picks for the movies you think are going to make the most money over this coming summer. And then we will keep track and kind of update it through the summer and then let you know at the end of the summer who had the best prognostication, skills amongst our audience and amongst us. We'll be joined again next week as we were last year. Fingers crossed, things can always happen, but they have both agreed to come on. John and Alice will be with us again for the Summer of Some Game this year. And we will also, of course, be joined by ChatGPT, thanks to Andrew's amazing picks last year. We'll have to see if ChatGPT has learned anything over the last year from what happened last time.
It only gets smarter, Aaron.
That's what I've heard. hey, just a quick aside here before we get into everything today. Speaking of quote what we call AI right now, there is a game I watch on Netflix called The Circle, and it's a fun game. It's a social media game. You know, I've enjoyed every season, and the game is such that you either come on as yourself or you come on as a catfish. You can pretend to be whoever you want because none of these players ever see each other. They just interact in DMs and through chats and through, you know, competitions where they don't hear or see each other, aside from photos that they put up, which could be fake photos. One of the contestants this year is an AI chatbot.
I love it.
And it is amazing. So I will just say it is very scary how well the chatbot is doing in this game at pretending to be human. So it's interesting times. It's interesting times. And we will see if ChatGPT can join us in the Summer Sum Game this year. It'll be fun.
That just came out last night, right? Circle?
It was a couple, nights ago, something like that. The first four episodes came out, and then they'll drop another few this next week. And yeah, that's how they do it, is they'll drop a chunk at a time for these shows.
I'm not really a big reality TV person, but man, The Circle is so addicting.
Yeah?
It is so good. That is my jam.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into it. No need to wait any further. We have stalled long enough. We are no longer in slow motion. Let's get to the good stuff. Let's talk about Rebel Moon, Part 2, The Scar Giver.
You're all here. Because there is nothing to return to. Dark days lie ahead of us all. We will teach you how to fight. That's impressive.
The rebels gear up for battle against the Motherworld as unbreakable bonds are forged, heroes emerge, and legends are made. Rebel Moon Part 2 follows, you'll never believe this, Rebel Moon Part 1. Is what it follows. It is all on Netflix and comes to us from Zack Snyder. My understanding of this whole thing is he wanted to do a Star Wars movie and couldn't do an official Star Wars movie, so he did a Star Wars movie anyway. That's kind of how this came to us. We haven't really talked about Rebel Moon Part 1. So what I would like for you to do, Andrew, after you tell us if you liked it, loved it, disliked it, hated it, or it was just okay, is to briefly tell us your thoughts on the first Rebel Moon Part 1 and kind of where you stood coming into this one as far as, you know, your level of anticipation or what you were hoping for. But did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
For Rebel Moon Part 2, I am going with did not like it.
Did not like it for Rebel Moon.
Straight down the middle, did not like it.
Part 2, I'm going with did not like it as well. And I'm going to say low side of did not like it so that I make you go first. Okay. And also, it's true. I didn't like this movie. So yeah, tell me a little bit about how you felt about the first one and kind of what you were thinking going into this one.
I felt pretty much the exact same about this one, how I felt about the first one.
Okay. Which means you weren't coming into this with any kind of big anticipation.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was mainly going into this wanting to be done with it.
you can tell Zack Snyder doesn't want to be done with it.
No, he wants to keep going. Which, you know what? There is something in me that wants to give credit to Zack Snyder. The man really wanted to make a Star Wars movie, and they told him no, but he went ahead and he made one in anyway. There is something very Sylvester Stallone about that, the perseverance of it all.
Uh-huh.
I really do respect it. I don't, that doesn't mean I have to like the product.
Right.
I think the product is lacking in many, many areas. So I will just quickly cut off my rant because I can tell that this one is going to go for a while if I don't cut it off now. But I can tell that, or I can tell you that by watching this one, all of my complaints about the first one were not addressed. So all of the issues I had with the first one, I'm just going to be saying them over and over again for here.
Yeah, it feels like, to me, it feels like we have, if you're being generous, which I'm going to try to do here for a bit, which actually I try to do probably more often than not, is you have a putting the team together in the first one and then a last, you know, a take a stand in the second one, right? That's kind of what we're dealing with here. Like, if you're looking at how these movies are different, the first one is the we got to get the team together, and the second one is, okay, now we got to do the thing. We got to accomplish the thing, right? And there's an interesting little cheat the first one does where it also kind of accomplishes the thing, but it doesn't actually accomplish the thing, and it really doesn't accomplish the thing at all. So it like has a built-in nothing of a resolution, right? The resolution, I guess, has an impact in one way with one of the characters that we don't see again, but the main way doesn't have as much of an impact as we would hope for going into this one.
The three-act structure exists for a reason.
Right, right. And when you try to make two movies out of a single story, you kind of muddle that up a little bit.
I'm going to say something that's going to trigger so many people. It's gonna,
which is?
Dune fell into the same trap. The three-act structure exists for a reason. Dune is a trillion times better than this.
I think they are a great, great comparison to each other. Not because they are the same level of quality. They are not. Not because they are the same level of entertaining. They are not. The same level of successful. They are not. But what they are two movies that tried to do the same thing and take a big story and tell two other stories with it. I got to be honest, the way Dune is a little bit different is it didn't really try to have much of a resolution in its first one. And at some point, you kind of give it points for that, just going, you just kind of ended the movie, right? Like, I mean, there is a moment, but that moment is not a big resolution for anything that means the things this movie is eventually going to mean. Whereas in this movie, they tried to have their cake and also have their cake. Like they tried to to do the same thing twice, and that's quite a bit different as far as I'm concerned. Other ways I can be generous for this movie is one of the ways that I'm always generous with Zack Snyder. I think he has an incredible eye for visuals. I think there's some really beautiful stuff going on here. Love watching this on a great screen with great sound. Like, there's some really cool stuff that you will see. Does he depend on slow motion a lot? Yes, he does. I, however, am not the person saying that's necessarily a bad thing. It's a little bit of a crutch, a little bit of a habit, but it's kind of awesome a lot of the time. Like, there's a reason he does it, because it kind of looks amazing a lot of the time. So if
farming in slow motion,
okay, maybe not the farming, but yes, the action for sure. Yeah. So I am one who thinks that Zack Snyder has a beautiful eye, and really, I really enjoy watching the visuals he wants to put on screen. Do I wish I was interested in the story he was telling as well? Yes, I do. That would be nice, but you know, beggars can't be choosers, I suppose.
Yeah.
There's that.
There's a scene that totally sums up my feelings on the film as a whole, or I should say on this franchise as a whole, because I don't know if they're going to make more after this. Right. It's near the end of this film during a battle sequence when a robot arrives on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
This angelic music plays over this absolutely gorgeous slow motion shot. And I'm just looking at something out of an Arthurian legend. It's gorgeous. And I just remember sitting there thinking, man, if I cared at all about who that was, this would be an astonishing sequence.
If this meant something, I'd actually have emotions right now.
Yeah.
That is the exact pinpointed moment that I wanted to talk about as well. And
is it really?
It really is, because I think it stands for something that this entire franchise deals with as a whole, which is, it is a big moment that is somehow both extremely predictable, right? Like something you knew was happening. Like, the movie has foreshadowed it, set it up, and, you know, done all these things. So it's both extremely predictable and also somehow completely powerless.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird for those two things to, you know, to work together like that in those moments. You know, like, a deus ex machina, which this moment is, almost literally, is one of those things that's supposed to be a surprise, and, you know, it's not. It's weird to have something that has been foreshadowed so much, and yet you're still not invested in it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, if a movie's been selling you something, then at least you would think, oh, okay, now I understand, you know, what that is. And it's just these movies just haven't done that for me.
Well, I can't find a way to truly care about any of these characters at all, even after they literally sat in a circle to share their sob stories to each other.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, so is this what Zack Snyder thinks character development is?
Right.
You just have to get everybody in a circle, tell their backstory that's really sad, and then we automatically want to root for them. No, character development happens naturally. It comes through gestures. It comes through words. It comes through all these different things. You can't just sit somebody down and say, here's my backstory. Now you have to care about me because you know about me. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost thought during that scene that this is the scene that says, you know what might have worked a little bit better is a miniseries, like an 8-episode season one kind of thing. Because each of those stories could have been an episode of television, and that might have been interesting. Then you've got cool stuff you can kind of, like, it feels different each week. It feels fresh each week. Those stories all happen within this 10-15 minute kind of chunk of the, you know, the movie just chunking out exposition. Like, it's just trying to get through it. And I wasn't able to live in those worlds and understand those people in a way that I wanted to, just because it felt like these are the basic strokes of kind of their story, not what it was. Now, does this mean, Andrew Ormsby, that the eventual 6-hour rated R Snyder cut is going to be good, or at least better?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, because what happened with the Snyder cut was a terrible tragedy with his family. You know, he lost his daughter, and then what's his face came and stepped in to do Justice League. Joss Whedon, thank you. So this is not Zack Snyder coming in to say, here was my actual vision.
But I think it kind of is. Like, he's talked about his cut through all of this. Like, before the first one come out, he was saying, wait till you see the longer version. It's going to be amazing and violent and rated R. And just, like, he's been promoting this rated R version all through this.
Well, I was not aware of that, and that infuriates me.
Tell me about your anger.
Well, because, like I was saying, with the Snyder cut, with the Justice League Snyder cut, that was him coming out and saying, this was my vision.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how, and you can understand why he wasn't given his vision because of what happened with him and his family. Here, I don't see a studio telling even Netflix that just greenlights everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see them sitting down to tell Zack Snyder, here, we saw what Warner Brothers did to you, and you say you never want to go with them again. Mm-hmm. We want to make a contract with you to where you can just make movies for Netflix now. And I don't see them just going, here, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And it just, I don't see that happening. Maybe it did. But it doesn't make sense to me that it would.
I agree with you. And I think the more cynical take here is probably the correct one, which is that it's just a way to have more content from the same thing. That this was always the plan. It was always the plan to release these two movies and then release the bigger one that's all of them. And my response to that is the same as yours, which is just release your vision.
Yeah.
Tell the story the way you wanted to tell the story.
Don't
and put it out.
Waste my time.
Correct. Yes, exactly. So yes, there is something about it that is very infuriating.
Don't treat me as a test subject for your content. Don't just throw stuff out, see what works and what doesn't, and then re-release it. Don't DLC movies.
Yeah, no, I agree. There are a few things we probably don't need to spend a lot of time on because they're just givens. The amount of Star Wars in these movies is insane. The you know, just how cut and paste, like the lightsaber stuff is,
yeah.
The ship stuff is, the android stuff is, you know, I think I
the
called
only thing
the android
I don't
in
see
this one.
Jimmy.
I think I called Jimmy in this one T13CPO, and that's, you know, that's kind of it's very much a C3PO kind of character. Like everything in this feels like it comes from Star Wars. So it's like you're looking for those seeds of something original. They're hard to find.
Yeah. Well, I hope Anthony Hopkins got paid well.
Yes. Are there any performances you like in this? You like Jimon Hounsou? He's doing all right, right? Like,
I don't know if Jimon Hounsou knows how to do a bad performance. I really don't. I will say that I think that Sophia Boutella, she is a good actress. I just don't think that she's given enough here script-wise to actually, you know, show us what she can do.
Yeah.
But there was a sequence at the end of this movie where she's like really sobbing and like trying to get emotional and stuff. And I bought it. I believed her.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem is the thing that she's sobbing about is rendered completely useless by the story. Like it's,
yes. Don't get me wrong. Yes.
it's the storytelling. This is just really bad. And I guess if I'm looking at the negatives, that's probably where I land. Storytelling's not an easy art. It may look like one, but it's not. And it can go wrong in so many ways. It just doesn't usually go wrong in all of the ways. Like, every storytelling stumble that you can make, I feel like these movies have made, whether it be from completely undermining their own plot structure, whether it be from not understanding character development, like, all of these things are just subpar in these movies and just makes it difficult to connect to. And so I just end up going, ooh, pretty. And that's fine. Like, I like screensavers as much as the next guy. But, like, you know, I want stories out of my movies. And I'm just having a hard time connecting to these. Aside from, Andrew, it's an underdog story. That's just, like, built in. You know, like there's a built-in thing with underdog stories in human nature where you just like got something to root for. Those are hard to screw up. So trust me when I say it's wild that they screwed this one up. Like, you know, but that's there. So that's like the one thing like you can maybe hold on to in this story is like, oh, we're rooting for the underdog. Cool. I know how to do that.
I also remember watching this movie going, they made Seven Samurai in one movie. They made Magnificent Seven in one movie. Why do you need two movies to tell the exact same story?
Right.
Is it all the slow motion just makes up the time?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably something like that. By the way, shout out to Corey Stoll, who was maybe the best performance in either of the movies in the first one. I just wanted to mention that since we didn't talk really about the first one. I thought he was incredible.
Who was that? First one.
Corey Stoll.
Mm.
He was on the rebel farming planet leader.
Didn't
guy
he get
at the
MC
beginning.
Hammer timed?
Yes, yeah. He did. Yes, indeed. Well, I don't really have much more to say about Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. I look.
Can't wait to see the next one.
Just super excited to see where this franchise goes next. I mean, it can't go down, in my opinion.
True. This is the lowest rated Zack Snyder movie he's ever done.
Mm, interesting. Okay. Yep. Let's move on. Let's get on to our second review, shall we? Let's talk a little bit about The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Gus March Phillips, I have a mission I want you to lead. Thank you, Sergeant.
What's the plan?
To neutralize the German U-boats in the North Atlantic.
We're losing the war.
Hitler is not playing by the rules, so neither are we.
We both know that I'm not very popular with the administration.
The reason they find you unattractive is the very reason I find you attractive.
It's 1940. Winston Churchill and Ian Fleming form a clandestine combat organization for Britain's military that changes the course of World War II and prefigures the modern Black Ops unit through its unconventional and entirely ungentlemanly fighting techniques against the Nazis. Andrew, this comes to us from that guy one Richie. Guy. Get it? that one guy.
That one guy, Richie.
Yeah. It is his latest. It stars Henry Cavill and many others in a World War II story. Everybody loves to see Nazis get killed. What did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or was it just okay?
Have you ever seen The Mexican with Brad Pitt and Julia Roberts?
Oh, no. Yes.
You have?
I have.
For me, that was the most average movie that I had ever seen.
Mm.
It is now The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. It is the most pure, okay movie I've ever seen.
All right. So you're going with just okay then.
Just
right
okay.
Right dead in the center of just
okay.
It can't
be more dead in the center.
Well, then it will probably surprise you to know that I loved this movie.
Good.
I had so much fun in this movie. So I will start with why I think that is. And I think it's because, in my opinion, this movie has such a firm grasp on the type of movie it is. And everybody is in the same movie. Everybody is playing the same level of smarm and tone and humor and elevated reality. I think there's something really interesting about an elevated historical fiction, or, you know, this idea that you take an event that really happened in history and you keep some of the names or the events the same, and then you just make this elevated, the real world isn't like this, even though these things happened in the real world kind of movie. And I just was able to give myself to it so quickly that I found it really, really fun and interesting. It's like a really cool way to learn about a real historical thing, which, by the way, even though it happened in 1940, we just found out about it 7 years ago or 8 years ago when, you know, they declassified a lot of Churchill's stuff. So this wasn't even known until very recently. So it's a fairly new story, even though it happened 80 years ago or whatever. So, you know, watching all of these players have fun, have a good time, I've never seen in the history of movie making so many first shot kill shots from every single distance. Like, the movie's like, it's like Fast Five, as if Fast Five were, you know, a historical World War II drama. These are superheroes in many ways. And yet, it's so much better than the Fast movies at allowing me to attach to who these human beings are and who these characters are. Like, I felt like the characters were really well defined, and I knew what each of their roles were, and there were these interesting moments that happened where the person who you know is the leader isn't the one giving the big idea, and yet at the end doesn't let his ego get in the way and just goes, yeah, let's do this thing. You know, like, it avoids some really interesting movie tropes too by just kind of being the movie that it wants to be and just going where it wants to go. I was never bored. I was always having a good time, and I just found myself smiling throughout it. So, yeah, I really had a good time with this. What are some, anything that you liked about it?
liked? No, everything was just okay. But actually, I take that back. I think Rory Kinnear is such an underrated actor.
Yeah, yeah,
he's great. Such an underrated actor. So
yeah,
good.
I didn't realize that was him. I honestly didn't even realize it was him.
I swear, I thought it was Cary Elwes playing two different characters, and he was just in makeup.
Yeah, but, yeah.
As far as other performances, I think that everybody, like you said, everybody knows what type of movie they're in. They're mm-hmm. in this superhero film, which makes sense because every single one of these actors has played a superhero.
Right?
Yeah, I liked Alan Ritchson. I liked Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill, he's got some acting chops on him that I think that
mm-hmm.
he's going to be getting some awards content, not for this, but down the road. I think that he's going to give us a performance where everybody's going to be like, wow, I didn't know you had it, but I saw mm-hmm. the hints. I saw the signs, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I really, really like everybody in this movie. And I like how the movie treats its characters. For instance, the Marjorie Stewart character mm-hmm. could very easily, in the movie almost hints even at, be a damsel in distress. But the movie allows her to be strong and have all of her moments at her own say-so, right? Like it doesn't ever really allow her to be the damsel in distress, even though it somehow builds tension through it anyway, right? Because she's our main hero that's in most direct contact with the evilest of the evil Nazis, right? And so there's this tension that the movie builds. And you're like, oh, who's going to save her? How is she going to be, you know, saved? And the movie allows her to be her own hero. And I thought the movie did that really well with its characters. It allowed them to fulfill the end result of their character arcs in, you know, a natural and interesting way. So yeah, I really like that about the movie too.
Yeah. My biggest issue with this film and what could potentially save a sequel is you said that there's one-shot kills and that these people are superheroes. Mm-hmm. For me, that negates any sense of stakes in this film. Like, I don't ever worry for the safety of any of these people because they're so OP. It's kind of like somebody turned on God mode in a video game and they're just going mm-hmm. around just obliterating everybody. And don't get me wrong, I love seeing Nazis get blown to bit as much as the next guy does. But they're, I can't believe I'm about to say this, too much. Too much.
You heard it here first. Andrew Ormsey said, "Let's let some of the Nazis live." Andrew's asking for.
They did let one Nazi live,
and that's another example for me of why I like this movie. Like in a lot of movies, that moment is used against them later in a big way, right? Like, you know, the one person you let live or whatever comes back to haunt you in the third act, you know, kind of thing. And this movie's like, you know, no, this movie just felt so self-assured to me. I bought into the tension. I bought into the danger just because I believed that the movie was going to have a moment where, you know, they were going to falter or they were going to fall or those kind of things. And I think the movie actually kind of does without spoiling a little bit. But it's one of those things where, I was kind of on board with a, just like, these are the heroes, they're doing hero stuff, let's go, you know? And it kind of felt fresh to me. It just kind of felt like straightforward A to B without having to go, through A.5 and A.7, and you know, like I don't know. There's something fresh about that. Just to watch a movie about, you know, amazing, elevated, cool people being amazing and elevated and cool. So it kind of like the Ocean's movies, honestly, are like that as well. You know, where you're never really in doubt that it's going to work or that these people are awesome or that they're going to get the job done or whatever. But somehow it still manages to build tension. At least it did for me. And it just sounds like it didn't for you, which I think I can understand.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's the fact that this is based on a real story, so you're kind of like, well, they wouldn't declassify something where it was a thing and everybody got killed and it didn't work, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I'm not ignorant to that fact, but at the same time, the movie does portray these people in a way to where I need something that makes me fear for their safety. And I just didn't get it in this movie.
I did. I felt it. I definitely feared for Marjorie. I definitely feared for...
Oh, that was so fleeting, though, for me. For me, it was.
Yeah.
Because that moment is so quickly gone that...
Yeah,
and which I kind of liked. If I'm getting spoilerish, then edit this out.
Yeah,
so that was so fleeting and that came so quickly.
I do, because I feel like... This movie over and over again felt a little counterintuitive to me. It felt like it zigged when a lot of movies would zag, right? Like it felt like that there is this list of things that movies just know they have to do. And this movie's like, we don't have to do that. We can just have fun. We're just going to have fun. And the fact that that resolved quickly was kind of fun the way it resolved. You know what I mean? Like it was just like, I don't know. It could just be, again, a mindset thing. We talk about this all the time. Maybe I was just in the right mindset to enjoy this ride. And that's, you know, that's very, very possible. But every move the movie made, I was just like, thank you. That was a blast. Do it again.
I did laugh a lot in this movie. We haven't talked about the humor in the film at all.
Yeah, it's very funny.
The movie is a very funny film. The bit where Henry Cavill is just going around like, can I have this? Can I have this? I want this. That's fun.
It is. I love the opening scene too. You know, it's, I think this movie has a great opener and I think there's a lot of fun there. There's a scene with a British warship, that I thought was really, really fun. There's a lot of, I have a lot of good memories watching this movie. So I'm excited to watch it again sometime.
So it's even rewatchable for you. You liked it that much. That's awesome.
Yeah. One of the most interesting historical things that I learned from this movie was that Ian Fleming based Bond on one of these guys, on the Cavill guy. So that's really fascinating and adds a little bit of texture to kind of what this movie is doing. Because the movie itself is kind of James Bonded a little bit, you know, in some ways. So, you know, it's interesting to have Fleming be an actual character in the movie and then also make the movie feel a bit Flemingy. You know,
I mean, we even have Cary Elwes plays M. So.
Yes.
So it is very Bondish.
Yes, absolutely. Any other things you want to say about the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare?
Both movies, no post-credit scene.
That is true. My one last thing is I really do love the way that this movie integrated the local population of that community, that port, into the plot. It did not feel ham-fisted. It didn't feel short-shrifted. It felt like a legitimate part of what was going on. And I think there are a couple scenes that really locked it in for me of camaraderie, which this movie does really well. This movie does camaraderie really, really well. And there are a couple of camaraderie scenes with a couple characters, specifically Henry Cavill. And I'm trying to remember what the name of that character was.
Henry
I think
Cavill's?
The actor is Danny Sapani. What?
Henry Cavill's character name?
No. The character that he had those camaraderie moments with. And I think it really allows for the local population of that to become just a really legitimate part of the story, which I thought was a really cool thing. So that would be my one last thing. There you go. That is the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. It is out in theaters right now if you want to check it out. Before we head on to the best ever challenge this week, a big thank you to our amazing SiftPop members. You can go to patreon.com/SiftPop if you're curious what that looks like. Support starts at $3 a month and it helps keep this podcast going, helps keep the website going. Check out SiftPop.com for a lot of fun stuff there. And yeah, so we really, really appreciate it. We also record a bonus show a lot of weeks. So Andrew runs those and we had an interesting conversation about Quentin Tarantino and Alamo Drafthouse and some other interesting things this week. That's just for our SIFPOP members. So if you want to be one of those, go to patreon.com/SIFPOP. And thank you. Thank you for doing that.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We don't often grab questions from the live chat in the middle of a show. It's just not something we usually do. We're here to record a podcast, not necessarily do a live show. But I did want to address somebody asking if we got a chance to watch a certain movie. They ask about Problemista. This is Yo Hanan on Twitter asked this. And it is interesting to me, Andrew, and tell me if you agree with this. The answer, by the way, is I have not. I don't know if Andrew has. Mm-mm. But it's interesting to me that even in a downtime, quote unquote, in with, you know, oh no, where are all the movies kind of time, I still have like five or six movies that have come out this year that I just haven't had a chance to get around to. Like there's still more than I can watch. So
it's
just,
April. It's like,
and it's right. And it's April. So, I think you can safely assume that if it's not one we're doing a main review on, that I will probably watch it when it comes out on VOD. That's generally when I get a chance to get around to things, that we don't do a main review on. So yeah, I just thought I'd get that out there before we get into the best ever challenge. You ready for it, Andrew?
Let's do it.
We're going to do some best ever challenging on Anthony Hopkins movies. Best ever Anthony Hopkins movie, or more technically, best ever movie that Anthony Hopkins was in. If you have a movie higher than the other person,
Trump!
We will trumpet and talk about it at the highest spot. So let's go number five to number one. Andrew, kick us off. What's your number five Anthony Hopkins movie?
The World's Fastest Indian.
Mine too.
Really?
Yeah, I had it at number five.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, it's good.
Just like this movie. It's so fun and so uplifting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It this is the true story of Burt Munro, who designed a it looks like a piece of junk, but it was the world's fastest motorcycle. And he took it out. He was from New Zealand, and he took it to the Utah Salt Flats. And he made everybody eat his dirt with his piece of junk motorcycle. I absolutely love this movie.
Yeah, this falls into the category for me of movie I was not expecting to blow me away. And then it did. I just I remember watching this when it came out and just being like, okay, I like Anthony Hopkins. I'll watch, you know, this movie. Didn't really know a lot about it, which is the case with a lot of movies I see. And then we're just like, well, that was a crazy good story and, you know, really well told. Yeah, this is well worth a watch. This is one, get it on your watch list if you haven't seen it. It's a great watch. It's a great story. You're in for a really good time. So
yeah, if you like movies like Eddie the Eagle, you know, just uplifting stories about an underdog, then this is right up your alley then.
All right, I guess that means it's time for you to tell us what your number four is.
Yes, it is The Mask of Zorro.
Oh, interesting. Do tell.
I think that Martin Campbell directed this, and I think that this is one of his best movies. I know a lot of people would say something like Casino Royale or any of the other Bond movies that he's done, but I think that The Mask of Zorro is up there in that conversation. What is the movie with George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez?
Are you talking about Out of Sight?
Out of Sight. Everybody says that Out of Sight has the greatest sexual chemistry between two lead actors.
I have certainly mentioned it, yes.
I think the Mask of Zorro with Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones is the up there.
Yeah.
For me, that's the number one sexual chemistry between two lead actors.
Yeah, no.
And the movie's really good. It's such a good action movie.
I need to watch it again, to be honest. I think you're right. I remember enjoying it, and I think the things you say, I remember being true, but I just haven't seen it in so long. I need to give it another shot.
Your number four?
My number four is Hitchcock. This was where Anthony Hopkins played Alfred Hitchcock and played him very, very well, mind you. Not that you would be surprised by that. It's a movie just as much about the Helen Mirren character, which was Hitchcock's wife, Alma, which is a great story to tell, because as much as people know about Alfred Hitchcock, they do not realize how influential she was in a lot of the decisions he made and a lot of the things that he did. So she was a creative force of her own. Scarlett Johansson is in here as Janet Leigh, which is really, really interesting. Jessica Biel is in here as Vera Miles, which is really interesting. James Darcy is an incredible Anthony Perkins in this. I was really impressed with the casting. I was really impressed with the story it told. I'm, a Hitchcock nut. I love his movies. I've read a lot of the biographical stuff. And so to see this captured on screen like this was really, really interesting to me. So I love this movie.
Very cool. I need to see it. Because I know how much you love Hitchcock.
And I do.
To hear that you, normally it's the people, or it's the movies like this that I would imagine you would criticize the most. So to hear you say that it's actually good, that they did it justice.
I just think it's a great choice to make Alma such a huge part of the movie. Like that to me is the story that's worth, there's a lot of stories worth telling about his career. I think there's probably one that will happen someday that tells a little bit about his mistreatment, maybe too strong, maybe not, I don't know, but there's a story to be told about his view of actors and he is very famous. One of his quotes is actors are cattle, you know, like the idea that they weren't there to be artists. They were there to be his pieces, to put where he needed them and to do what he told them to do, and to act. And so I think there's another one to be made, about that, about kind of that darker edge of where Hitchcock's treatment of other human beings came from, and those kind of things, and why he was so interested in stories of, death and murder and the perfect murder and those kind of things. So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff there, but I think this is a really good avenue to take. Loved Hitchcock.
Okay, I'll check it out.
All right, on to our number threes. What do you got at number three?
Coming in from 1980... directed by David Lynch, we have The Elephant Man.
Mm.
Yes.
Talk on it.
True story about John Merrick, or James Merrick, I think was his real name. But in the movie, he's John Merrick. A man who had, I think it was elephantitis is the name of the affliction. And Anthony Hopkins plays a doctor who is going to take care of him now. Oh, man, this is a rough movie.
Yeah.
It's beautifully told, though. John Hurt just kills it in this movie as John Merrick. If you haven't seen it, then I can't recommend it enough. It is a rough watch, though, to see what this man went through in his life just because of his affliction.
Yeah.
That they treated him like an animal. And then he has the line, I am not an animal, I am a man. And it slays me every time.
What? That was the 80s, right?
1980.
That is The Elephant Man. You check that one out. My number three might be our first Trump. You might have this higher. I have The Father at number three.
Yeah. Trump!
All right. What's your number two then?
The Father.
Hey!
Yeah. If we were going based solely off best Anthony Hopkins performance, this would be my number one.
Yeah, you might be right.
It's so good, and it's so heartbreaking too. I don't think that they could make a movie that that shows visually what it must be like to have Alzheimer's or some form of dementia.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they capture it beautifully here because the confusion that you feel is intentional.
Yeah,
the mistrust you feel is intentional. Mm-hmm. All of these things are done to give the audience the feeling of what it must be like to have this affliction. And Anthony Hopkins is so good.
Yeah.
There's a reason why he won Best Actor that year. It's still awkward, though.
Yes, one of the most awkward wins, but still well-deserved.
Yeah.
Yeah,
whenever you have to apologize for winning.
Yeah. I agree with you. This movie is phenomenal. His performance makes it, but also the way this movie is done it succeeds so completely at its goal. You know, the goal is to put you in the mindset of somebody with senility or Alzheimer's or, you know, just aging, and it swaps in actors for different characters and you're just like, who's this person? And that's, you know, part of the intentional magic trick that they're doing. And it's really good. So,
yeah.
Yep. I had it at number three. You had it at number two.
What's your number two?
I think probably going to get trumped, I would imagine. I have Silence of the Lambs at number two.
Yeah. Trump!
What's your number one, Andrew?
Silence of the Lambs.
Hey, talk about it.
It's one of the greatest crime dramas ever made. I think that...
I agree.
I think that... Anthony Hopkins, this is probably the most famous performance he's ever given. I don't think that's questionable. I shouldn't say think. It is the most famous performance he's ever given. Yeah. And he's only in the movie for, what, 12 minutes? Something crazy like that. It just speaks volumes to how good, like, Clarice Starling is as a character. She's so well written. And you want to do proud or strong female characters right, this is how you do it. It's Don't minimize your villains to be like, don't treat your lead female actresses as helpless damsels in distress. She mm-hmm. shows you perfectly here that you can be not even a physically imposing character, but just the way she carries herself, the way that she isn't. And she's intimidated by Hannibal Lecter. Don't get me wrong, but she doesn't fear him.
Yeah, I think a lot of the times we mistake this idea of, you know, weakness as, you know, not. So, for instance, being intimidated or questioning yourself or whatever, like those are weakness in a character. And those weaknesses are what makes the perseverance in the strength so powerful. And so when you're dealing with, you know, like you mentioned, a strong female character, it's not that you can't give her weaknesses, that you can't have her be intimidated or struggle or weak. It's that you allow her to find growth in the way through those challenges and those weaknesses. I mean, it's storytelling 101, but it's just for some reason, you know, it's so many protagonists through the years have been men. We know how to do it with men, but we just, you know, Hollywood has struggled to do it with women. And I think the Jodie Foster character, who, by the way, Jodie Foster, just incredible in this movie, is a good example of it. So, yeah, Silence of the Lambs is my number two. And your number one.
So that leaves us with only one movie, which I'm very curious as to what it could be. Your number one.
You don't know?
Is it Rebel Moon?
It is Rebel Moon Part 1.
Yeah.
Which many people forgot the original title, which was The Two Popes, was the original title of this movie. I love The Two Popes. I've seen this movie several times and just find it to be emotionally, philosophically, and spiritually captivating. It speaks to something that I think is of crucial importance to any person of faith, of any faith, which is the idea of how does faith evolve? If faith changes, does that make it weaker? What do those changes mean about the foundation of the things you believe? And to see these two popes have those discussions, by the way, as these two popes really did, like this is, you know, based on a true story and just incredible performances from both Hopkins and Price in these two roles. I think this movie is phenomenal. It is one of my favorites. So I had it at number one for me.
My first honorable mention. This is dialogue done right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so, so good.
And you don't even have to be a person of faith to truly appreciate the moral quandaries or the ethical quandaries even that are going on here.
Sure. Let's talk about honorable mentions. We'll start with our amazing SifPop.com gurus, our writers over at SifPop.com. Who did they vote for this week?
Let me pull up that list real quick here. So coming in at number three, we had The Father.
Mm-hmm.
Then at number two, we had The Two Popes.
Mm-hmm.
And then obliterating everything was Silence of the Lambs.
Hey, that was my top three. My top three was The Father, Silence of the Lambs, and Two Popes. Not quite in that order, but close. All right. Honorable mentions. Thor Ragnarok, I think, is worth throwing out as a mention. Remains of the Day, I think, is worth a watch if you haven't seen it. Amistad, Steven Spielberg movie. Very, very good. And then an older one that's more popcorn, kind of fun entertainment with Alec Baldwin called The Edge.
I like The Edge.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
That bear is so terrifying.
Yeah.
We talk about how, what was that movie? The Revenant has the most infamous bear attack scene.
Yeah.
I think the scariest bear attack scene is in The Edge.
My number three that I would put in that category is Fox and the Hound, by the way. That's a great bear attack in that. That one too. So
that'd be a fun category one day. Bear attack movies.
Best ever bear attack movies.
Nobody put Grizzly Man. That's not in good taste.
No. Terrible taste. Did you have any others you wanted to mention?
Nope.
Okay.
Well, I'll throw out Beowulf. You know, I actually like that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. You've talked about that before. Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to our buried treasure. Finish off with that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about. I'll go first.
What you got?
I watched an old movie. When I say old, I mean the 90s. This is...
That hurt.
Hurt you? I mean, imagine how it hurts me. It's wild. This movie came out, you know, when I was in college. Anyways, 1996 Big Night is the name of the movie. This is Stanley Tucci and Tony Shalhoub as Italian brothers who are trying to start an Italian restaurant in New York City and trying to figure out how to do that. Isabella Rossellini is in there as well. And other people you might know, like Minnie Driver is a part of this movie too. This movie is just so immersive. Like you just feel like, oh, I just want to hang out and find out what happens to these brothers. Tucci and Shalhoub are so great. And I think in my review, I called it Top Chef Super Mario Brothers because they have a very... they have a very Mario and Luigi kind of relationship to them, but it's really interesting, fun, emotional, deep. It goes places you weren't expecting. I just want to throw a shout out to it because I don't hear a lot about it. So Big Night is the name of the movie.
Looking at it now, it looks like Stanley Tucci also wrote this movie.
Yes. Yeah. There you
That's
go.
Cool.
Yeah, he did write the movie. He also directed it with Campbell Scott. So
Passion project.
It's a passion project for the Tooch. What do you got, Andrew? What's your buried treasure?
My buried treasure is the number one show in the world right now. I'm going to go with Fallout. This is, without a doubt, for me, the best video game adaptation to either film or TV ever. Like, I thought that The Last of Us did a really good job, but The Last of Us was able to feel very cinematic, and it kind of felt like it just pushed all the video game stuff aside in The Last of Us. Here in Fallout, this is a video game show. Not that it takes place in a video game, but like all the mentalities and like the rules and stuff of a video game world exists here. Like a stim pack, which is like a health needle thing. Like if you get hurt, just put the needle in and it'll heal you just like in a video game, you know? And the story is so fascinating. I've already seen the first season through twice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I as soon as I was done, I had to rewatch it again. It's Jonathan Nolan, who we know from shows like Westworld, and he's the younger brother of Chris Nolan. Todd Howard did the show, who is the creator of the Fallout video games. It stars Ella Purnell, Walton Goggins, and who else is the main? Aaron Motton. All three of them, phenomenal. I think Ella Purnell just kills it as our lead. If you don't know what the show's about, it's pretty much what would happen if the Cold War didn't end just there. It takes place technically in the future, but it's basically what would happen if the nukes did go off. And 200 years after that, in an apocalyptic wasteland of America. Believe it or not, the show is so funny. It is very, very violent. So I want to give you guys that warning up front. But yeah, I cannot recommend it enough. I'm probably going to watch it a third time.
Interesting. You've almost got me sold. I honestly haven't heard a lot of buzz on it. Really? So yeah. So you're the first person I've heard like give it big ups. So
from what I've seen online, people who have not played the games love it, and people who have played the games love it.
Okay, so, well that's good news. Yeah.
Yeah.
I played a little bit of the first game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I went through a phase where I was just playing all this free stuff I could get on the PlayStation, and so I would just test them out, and like testing out all these big titles that I'd heard about, and I got very frustrated with that game very, very fast because it has...
It's open world.
Well, I don't think I even got to the open world part. I think it very quickly there was like... You have to aim and shoot and like you reload.
I want every video game ever.
I understand.
You have to do something that every video game requires. You
have no idea how frustrating that is to me because I'm terrible at it. So like, it's just like, I'm not having fun. This is not fun. So yeah. The second something becomes a first person shooter, I'm out. Like, it's just I have not developed those skills and I'm not interested in developing them.
Fair enough.
So, yeah. But I liked the tone of it. I remember thinking, oh, I like the tone of this game. If it was something I was having fun playing, I might stick around. But so maybe that's what the TV shows would be good for me then. Because I don't actually have to aim at things and shoot them, which is annoying. All right.
That's so funny.
It is very funny. So that is Fallout on Prime and Big Night, which I think you can find on Paramount Plus. I think it is there. So Fallout is on Amazon Prime and Big Night on Paramount Plus. Well, we did it, Andrew.
Woo!
We did a podcast again.
Yeah, we did.
Congratulations to you. Congratulations on achieving the title of podcast doer. It's something you should cherish.
If podcasts were Nazis, or if Nazis were podcasts, we would have obliterated them.
That's right. We'd have one shot it.
Yeah.
Unless it was a video game, in which case it would have taken me 100 shots and I still wouldn't have killed it. Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And much love and gratitude to our SIF Pop members for giving monthly to make SIF Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month, and you can check out the bonus episodes, other fun stuff there at patreon.com/siftpop. Also, lots of fun ways to connect with the podcast. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. Love those reviews. They help other people find the podcast as well. You can also email us at feedback@siftpop.com if you want to. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than getting me interested in any more Rebel Moon movies. We'll be back next week with the Summer Sum Game. We will be picking which movies we believe will make the most money this next summer. So join us then. And again, go to siftpop.com and make your own picks. Play against us. See you next week.
Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.